Okay, so it's up there. Hopefully I can work this thing. As you can see, what I'm hoping to talk about tonight is my random thoughts about Africa. You know, it's amazing. The reason why I said random thoughts is, you know, who knew what was going to happen? You know, they were just not connected at all except for because of Jesus. Okay, so they're just random thoughts. But the very first thing that I want to be sure that I do is say thank you from the bottom of my heart. One of the reasons why I wanted to share about this is because you were involved in the sacrifice. Because of you guys and your sacrifice last year with the missions contribution, Steve and I got to go and got to serve. But I think more than the serving that we did, we learned so much, and we were so touched, and that's what I'm hoping to share tonight. Also, I want to thank you guys for the service, not only this year, but over many, many years, giving to the churches in Africa, and I feel really grateful, but we were changed more than you would even know. That's where we were, right there. I don't know if you can see this. I'd hope that you would be able to see. But here's Africa, and here is the equator, right there. And so we were right here in this country right here in Abidjan. I think that was one of the surprising things. I'd never been close to the equator before. One of the things I think that surprised me the most is it was about 78 degrees or something, and the sisters came in. I was like, oh, I thought it was going to be hot here, you know, and it's actually very pleasant. And they came in with their winter coats on with jackets and hoods, and it was 78 degrees. And they're like, oh, we're freezing. It was so cold. I guess that's part of, you know, being near the equator. It's always gets dark at 7 o'clock, always. There's no such thing as today where it gets dark at 9 o'clock or whatever. It's 7 o'clock. It's dark, which was really cool. So we just learned so much. Thank you so much. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, though, was cultivating spiritual dreams. Now, no matter how old you are, most of us, we're dreaming about something. If you are a teenager, you're dreaming, oh my gosh, I'm going to graduate high school. This is exciting, and I can't wait. You're dreaming about going to college. You're dreaming about, for the very first time, I am going to get away from my parents. I'm going to make some of my own choices. That's a cool thing. It's a cool dream. As long as you make the right choices. Campus and single people. You might be ready. You might be thinking, I'm going to graduate from college. You know, I'm going to get a career. I'm going to have my very first real job. I'm going to live in an apartment on my own. I may just get my first boyfriend. I may even get married. That's exciting. What did you say? Maybe not, but you don't know. You don't know. Marrieds, you know, maybe you got married and you're dreaming, oh, I'm going to have kids one day. You know? Maybe I'm going to buy a house. But empty nesters, are you still dreaming? Are you dreaming about retirement? Are you dreaming about slowing down? Are you dreaming about getting your kids married or playing with grandbabies? Now, let me just say this. There is nothing wrong with moving to a warm climate. There's nothing wrong with playing with grandbabies. I am all for it, and I can't wait for it. But Are we cultivating spiritual dreams? You know, I've always dreamed of becoming a female Caleb. You see that girl right there? I always imagined that was going to be me. What can I do? You know, there was a feminist pin on her collar, and I covered it up with a little heart. I don't know if you see that little heart there. That's me. I did that. But I always dreamed I would be a female version of Caleb, that I was going to be strong and faithful and excited and vibrant for God until I was 85 or whatever age God took me home. And I want us to look over at Joshua 14, 6 through 14. The descendants of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know what the Lord promised Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the Lord's servant, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to scout the land, and I brought back an honest report. My brothers who went with me caused the people's hearts to melt with fear. But I remained loyal to the Lord my God. On that day, Moses promised me, 'The land where you have set foot will be an inheritance for you and your descendants forever, because you have remained loyal to the Lord my God.' As you see, the Lord has kept me alive these 45 years. As he promised, since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel was journeying in the wilderness. Well, here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as I was the day Moses sent me out. My strength for battle and for daily tasks is now as it was then. Now give me this hill country the Lord promised me on that day, because you heard then that Anakim are there, as well as large fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord promised." Then Joshua blessed Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and gave him Hebron as an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron belongs to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, as an inheritance to this day, because he remained loyal to the Lord, the God of Israel. And you know what? That scripture has always excited me. Not just, you know, as I've gotten older, but it excited me when I was young, because I made a commitment when I was in college that I was going to be faithful till the day I died. I was never going to give up. Never. The cool thing is that I'm very fortunate to have a husband who also has Caleb-like dreams. And, you know, he has been able to travel around. He's gotten to go with work, but he's also gotten to go visit Africa before me. He went to Africa. He got to teach and get to know these brothers and all this. And he also went to the Ukraine. And he got to be a part of a leadership conference there. And, I mean, it was really cool. But the sad thing is I didn't get to go. Who's calling? Will somebody turn off my phone? Who would call me on a Thursday night? Anyway, I always had a job that wouldn't let me off, or I had kids that I had to take care of, or, you know, I had sick family I had to take care of, but I could never join them. So Steve had these goals and these dreams spiritually, but he never thought he was going to do it all by himself. He always had this vision that the two of us would go together. Well, when the second opportunity to go to Africa came up, Steve really wanted me to go. But instead of being, you know, a little Calebette, you know, a little Calebette. My heart was like the other people. And my heart absolutely melted. I was just exactly like the other folks. I dreamed I was this girl right here, but I wasn't this girl at all. I don't know if you know this about me, but I have never lived more than 65 miles away from where I was born. I was born right in downtown Atlanta. And I went to college at the University of Georgia, and that's the farthest I could ever scoot. And then I came on back. You know, and I always heard my grandparents say, "Ooh, I just like sleeping in my own bed. I don't want to go anywhere." And that's kind of how I was. And I never could understand that when I was young. And now I understand it. I have Puff, and I have to spend quality time with Puff, and Puff is my bed. And and so the thought of going to Africa, my gosh. And I got to tell you, I was so afraid. Oh, my word. I didn't know French. I didn't know any other languages. I didn't want to go anywhere where I couldn't speak the language because I thought, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I won't know where to go. Who's going to help me? It was terrifying. And that wasn't just about Africa. I didn't want to go anywhere. You know, I did cross the border into Canada one time, and I did go down, and I went across the border in Mexico, but I never have been anywhere or done anything, and most people would think, oh, that's so surprising, you just don't see it, but I am, I'm the biggest chicken you've ever seen, and so anyway, and plus at that point in time, Ben was getting engaged. And we had this wedding coming up, and I'm like, oh, no, I've got a wedding. Finally, I get somebody to get married, and we're going to Africa. What the heck? How did that happen? And so I was like, what if I go and I die? I'm telling you, it's the truth. It's exactly what I was thinking. You know, will I get to see him? And so, oh my gosh, I was so afraid I would get sick. You know, I was afraid I would get sick, and guess what? I did. But not as sick as everybody else. And I was afraid about the food. I told the sisters, oh, don't give me any monkey eyes. I don't know why I had monkey eyes. Nobody eats monkey eyes, but I thought, oh, I'm going to have to eat something crazy, and I was so afraid. So, anyway, so I had to make a faithful decision. I mean, I had to do it, and it was hard. And, you know, every time I would sit there and see that special contribution announcement, and please give so that we can dedicate $5,000 so that Steve and Roxanne can go to Africa, I would sit there and I would shudder. I would cringe. But deep in my heart, I knew I had to face these things. And I had to become like Priscilla, who went with her husband. And I had to become like Sarah, who followed her husband. And he didn't even know where he was going. But she followed like a godly and spiritual wife. So I had to find some scriptures to help me get through this so I could do it. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy 1. 29 through 30. So I said to you, don't be terrified or afraid of them. The Lord your God, who goes before you, will fight for you, just as you saw him do for you in Egypt. And you saw in the wilderness how the Lord your God carried you as a man carries his son all along the way you traveled until you reached the place, this place. But in spite of this, you did not trust the Lord your God, who went on before you on the journey to seek out a place for you to camp. He went in the fire at night and in the cloud by day to guide you on the road you were to travel. So here it is, and Caleb is 85 years old. And everybody, they've gotten through the wilderness, and it's time to go take the land. And the Israelites were afraid. They were afraid to go take the land. And so what did God do? He reminded them. He reminded them. You know, they probably thought they were the ones who made it through the wilderness, that they were the ones who made it through slavery, that they were the ones that made it out of Egypt. They probably thought they were the ones. They probably thought that they were that Calebet, that woman who, I can do it all, sisters. But through all the trials, God was carrying them like a little baby. He was carrying them just like that. And, you know, that picture reminds me of Steve and how he would carry little Kevin. You know, Kevin's feet did not touch the ground. That baby's feet doesn't touch the ground. That is how God has carried us. We think we did it. But through all of our trials and all the things, you know, through getting Ephraim and Stephanie and raising them and helping them through it, you know, I think it's me, but it really is not. It is God carrying me like a man carrying his little babies. You know, and I think in taking care of Gammy and Bob, I think, you know, that's stinking hard. And I think I'm doing it. But it is God carrying us, carrying me like I'm a little baby. And he is helping me through everything. He's in the fire. He's in the cloud. He's finding a place for me to go. And so it's never been my strength at all. Through all these things I think I did, it's not been my strength. It's been God's strength. It's never been me in that picture. It's always been God tenderly and carefully taking me through my life. And the same for you. God carried me through. So I had to get myself settled down. I had to commit. And so finally, I said it out loud. I am going to Africa. Oh my gosh. And I just had to say it because I was terrified. But I knew once I'd said it and somebody had heard it, I was going to have to go. And so, you know, I did. And this may seem like nothing for you because you may be this world traveler and this awesome person. But, you know, there may be that something else that I'm strong at and you're weak. So this is my weakness. This is what God had to help me through. So anyway, I started doing some stuff. You know, Steve started a Skype class because one of the things I was so afraid of was I didn't know anybody. I was going to go over there and it was just going to be people I'd never met before. And so the cool thing was is somehow the Skype class got started where Steve started building relationships over in Africa with the leadership and the people who, the brothers and sisters who were, you know, they were thinking would become elders. So he started talking to them and he included me in on the classes. So on Sunday afternoons when we didn't have trouble communicating or with electricity or with the internet or with the computer or whatever, we were able to get together every other week. And that was so cool because on Sunday afternoons we'd sit down and there'd be a whole room of brothers and sisters in Africa and us up in Steve's office and we started talking. It was so cool. Well, unbeknownst to me, God was working. As soon as I started taking that step of faith, a sister over in Africa got called into her boss's office. She works for the State Department, and she's a sister who goes and she represents American universities overseas. This was at a time when the federal government didn't have that much money to dole out, and they had cut off all travel. So the boss called her in to their office. I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but called her in and said, "Listen, I want you to prepare a proposal to go somewhere, to go to travel, and I want you to submit this travel plan, and I want you to put it in there." And so anyway, but, you know, they didn't tell her where she was going. They just said, fill out the paperwork. And they said, "Why am I filling this paperwork out? You know it's going to be rejected. You know that they've cut off all the, you know," because she had enough work to do without filling out paperwork that was just going to be rejected. And so anyway, but typically when she would come to the United States, she would always go to Washington, D.C. So she says, you know, finally, after she filled out the paperwork, she said, "So where am I going?" And he said, "Atlanta, Georgia." So she contacted me on Facebook. She said, "Roxanne, you are never going to believe this. I'm coming to Atlanta." And this was like 3 or 4 weeks before we were to go to Africa. It was just mind-boggling to both of us that she would get an all-expenses-paid trip to come visit me. She thought it was for work. But it was God saying, "I am going to carry you carefully and tenderly to Africa." And so, that's my new friend. That's Julia and Nina Toyo. So she came to Atlanta about, 5 weeks or so before I went to Africa. And we got to have coffee and get to know each other. And she spoke English. And I had a friend. It was the coolest thing ever. One of the things I was really afraid about was, are we going to be safe? They just had a civil war. Oh, I was so scared. And I thought, am I going to make it through? And I would check that State Department website. And guess what happened? Right before time to go, they started letting families back in again. And they said, the only place you need to go in the Ivory Coast is Abidjan. And I was like, what the heck? That's where I'm going. It was awesome. God was just working and moving. It was fabulous. And then there was the wedding. Of course, they were going to get married that same week. And so, anyway, so we persuaded them, please move it 1 week ahead. So believe it or not, right before we went to Africa, we had the wedding. And then we had 1 week to get ready and zoom out of town. But you know what? I got to see my son get married, and it was awesome. It was awesome. God was just working and working and working. I had to plan meals and coverage, and praise God for Elaine Francis. Oh, my gosh. I don't know what I would have done if, huh? Yeah, it was scaring you too. I know, that's right. So anyway, you know, we had to have 4 people, 24-hour-a-day coverage, all these meals planned, and all this stuff, kids and here and there and all this planning, but you know what? God let us make it. So we packed our bags and we were ready to go, and doggone it, if Bob did not have a problem. Right as we were going to walk out of the door, I called Barbara the night before. "Barbara, he's got a toe infection and he's a diabetic. What do I do? Can this wait till after Africa?" No, it can't. So on the day I was supposed to go to Africa, I was in the emergency room, had not even finished. And I was like, oh God, why is this happening? This timing couldn't be worse. But I got to talk to everybody in the hospital, and I said, "I'm begging you, I got to get on an international flight, and I haven't finished packing." But I made it home 30 minutes before we were supposed to walk out of the door. I threw everything together, and we made it. It was awesome. God let every single solitary thing fall into place. And if we hadn't had a little of excitement, it just wouldn't have been the same. So anyway, but a lot of this forced me to think about heaven. It really did. I had to seriously think about heaven. And it was exciting, and I was ready. So I could go and do anything. And I imagined that God took our airplane, because, oh my gosh, one of the big things I was so afraid of was a 24-hour flight on an airplane. Oh my word, what would I do? Could I sleep? Could I think? What? Could I walk around? Am I going to get a blood clot? I just thought, oh Lord. But I imagined, just like that baby, I imagined God just holding my plane, and there was nothing wrong. We got there, and I felt unbelievably blessed. So once I got there, the kisses just started. I don't know if you, how you feel about that, but I look at these little things, these little oddball things. I go in the grocery store, and they play my favorite song on the radio, and I think, oh, God, that was you. Thank you so much. I love that song. I take every little thing, and I think, that's just a kiss from God. And so one of my kisses from God, I don't know if you can see her very well, but that's the sister and brother who lead the Monrovia Church of Christ in Liberia. And do you know what language they speak in Liberia? English. She was my kiss from God. I'm telling you that, sister. She was so good to me. She sat with me nearly every meal, translating and translating and translating. And because of her, I was able to make so many more friends than I would have ever been able to make. So she would sit there, and sisters would just crowd around, and we would all just talk and talk and talk. I was so impressed with their humility. Oh, my goodness. They just wanted to talk. They wanted to learn. I was so convicted by their hearts. But this sister right here made all the difference in my trip. I got to speak English. And she also made the other sisters who were learning English practice on me. So they would come over and they would say something and they would see if I could understand it. And so anyway, and I got to know some other sisters too. There's some sisters. That's the sister on the right there. She's single and just as faithful as she can be. There were some other ones. This is the women's class, just like tonight. You know, we're all women. And so this is one half of the class. That's the other half. Now, these aren't all the sisters. These are the sisters in leadership. And the meeting we went to was for, the first part was for leaders of all of French-speaking West Africa, okay? So these sisters all came in, and we got to have a class. So that was one half of the room, and that's the other half right there of the room. And, you know, one of the things that I learned is that, you know, I was so scared because I thought, oh, they're going to be so different from me, and I'm not going to be able to really relate. And the biggest thing I discovered was they are just like me all over the world. Sin is sin. Things you look forward to, you look forward to. And half of the questions that they asked or we talked about were, you know, I can't get my son to obey. Or I think we're in too many sports. We're having trouble getting to church. You know, everywhere, it's all the same. How do I be submissive to my husband? I'm thinking about quitting my job because I need to be closer to my children. All the same. Except for the witch doctor question. It was so funny because, you know how a few months ago we did the We did the class with the elders, and, you know, you guys would ask questions, and everybody said, oh, Lord, I hope I get a good question I can answer, you know. And so that's what we did for all these people. And so, you know, it was all these brothers and sisters, and so the sister stands up, and she's asking this question about her husband, the witch doctor, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And they all turned to me and said, that one's yours. And so we laughed the whole rest of the time that I got the witch doctor question. So they were all, we were all just alike except for that one issue. I don't really have to deal with that too much. So anyway, that's another sister. This sister got married after many years of being patiently single. And that's her little baby. And I just love that picture. I thought, I wish I knew how to wrap a baby like that. Because she'd just walk around and he would sleep. It was the sweetest thing ever. One of the other things that I got that was a blessing from God is I got to meet a bunch of brothers and sisters from the United States that I'd never met. Because we all went over there. And so this is Steve Sadin, and that's Hervé, who's going to come and teach for International Sunday. That's him. And so anyway, they were all there. And if you can see right back there, the brother who is right there in that yellow shirt, he leads the Montreal Church of Christ. And so he speaks French, so he came over because he could speak in their language and they could understand. And so that was great. He didn't have to be translated like we did. So anyway, so it was super cool. And another thing that was amazing is this is a church, and it's not in Abidjan. It's right outside of Abidjan in the old colonial capital. And the French, obviously, they were the they colonized that area. And this is in what's now a museum, but it used to be where the governor was of the area. Well, you know, of course, the French have long gone, and they're pulled out. But this was the jail. This is almost like underground. It's like being in a basement that doesn't have... I mean, it's dirt on the floor. It's not nice. It's not a finished basement by any stretch of the imagination. But that's where they have church. And they are super excited. The ceiling is very low, but it made me very grateful. When I think about Meadow Creek and thinking, man, I wish I had a building to worship in. I really do. All I have to do is think about the brothers and sisters who are super eager and super happy to worship in a former jail, in a basement, on a dirt floor. And they were thrilled. And this group started out with about seven, and they fill up that room now, which is super cool. But I think that one of my biggest and sweetest kisses from God. Look at that family right there. Can you believe that? Kristen was only 3 months old when she couldn't sit up by herself, you know. So for that picture, I had my hand up her dress, holding her up so she could even sit up. She was 3 months old. And that was taken in November of 1988. But the reason why I brought that picture is that picture represents to me one of the hardest days I have ever had. Because what Steve didn't tell me when he came, because he wanted us all smiling for the picture, was he lost his job that day. And that changed our family drastically. We were in financial straits like you would not believe. I got an infection, and I was keeping kids, and I lost my job right after this as well. Oh, my gosh, we struggled so badly. We struggled financially. We struggled spiritually. Steve was underemployed for a long time. We had to be on food stamps temporarily. I'm telling you, it was terrible right after this. And it was at that point in time that Mark and Diane Ottenweller were worshiping in Atlanta. And they sold everything they had, and they decided to go off on a mission trip. And I struggled so badly because I wanted Kristen, she got potty trained finally, and I couldn't even afford to go buy her Big Girl panties. I was so upset. I know that sounds really stupid, but that hurt me so much. And I told a sister, and she said, let me give you some underpants. That sounds so dumb. But she did, and oh gosh, it was such a horrible time. And so anyway, so I used to imagine the sisters going on this trip to Africa. And I used to think, I bet Diane Ottenweller couldn't get her haircut this month. I bet Diane Ottenweller couldn't do this and so. And I just put myself on this mission team somehow. I just identified with it. And so as I went through and as I struggled financially and struggled with all the struggles that we had, I thought about Diane and I thought about this team, and I didn't even know where they went. I didn't know where in the world in Africa they went. I just knew they went to a nondescript place in Africa, and their faith helped my faith to get through. Well, right after Nina Toyo came to Atlanta to visit, Elaine and I were together. I said, Elaine, these people, they think they know you from New York. And she said, really? And I got her in the room. She doesn't even remember. She's looking at me with this blank stare. So anyway, so we got online to look at Facebook so I could point her out, okay? So I found this picture on Facebook. That's that original team that went to Africa. And I don't know if you can see right there, but there's Mark Ottenweller, there's Diane, there's Anne Brigitte, there's Mike Tolliver, and various and sundry other folks that went on the original Africa team. That was my team. Well, doggone it, look who I've circled right here. Do you know who that is? Nina Toyo. And it just occurred to me, I was going to get to go to Africa. They went to the Ivory Coast. And I was going to get to go to Africa and tell them that they got me through that horrible time. And I was going to get to say, your faith helped me to get through this terrible time in my life. And I am so grateful to you. And I never dreamed in my wildest dreams I would get to go to Africa and tell you so. But that was a kiss from God, and I did. And I got to those ladies that were sitting there in those chairs, I got to thank them from the bottom of my heart and thank Nina Toyo, who God brought into my life to say, thank you. Without you, I don't know if I would have made it. So, you can't even read that right there. I'm so sorry. You can't read it. But it's a little note from the sisters, and I'll try to read it. It says, welcome to the conference. God is proud of you. He trusts you to reign in your country. We love you, sisters of Africa. That's my sweet, sweet note. And one of the other things that I got to see was, you know, we have special contribution year after year after year, and we give money, and we don't really understand what it goes to. And most of us never get to go and visit, but you know, we got to worship. And from that group right there, you know, the building that we got to help build over the years, and of course it wasn't just us. There were plenty of other congregations that participated, but it was something I know we always remembered. And we got to help build it. and I got to worship in it. And it started from that little group right there, and it is thousands of people now. Thousands. And it's thousands not only there, but, you know, all over Africa. And, you know, Sarah is a result of that, ultimately. And it was all, and I thought, I can't believe I get to go and I get to see what we sacrificed for. You know, I remember selling things, selling a truck, selling this, selling that, and you don't ever know what it goes for. But it went to a building, but ultimately, it went to lives. It went to souls. And it, oh my gosh, I felt so connected to these brothers and sisters. And that note to me, I felt mutually encouraged by our faith. They were encouraged by me, but I was super encouraged by them. It was an awesome, awesome thing. And the thing that I want to leave you with is I want you to have spiritual, kingdom-focused dreams. It is okay to want to play with your grandbaby's dog. Doggone it, I can't wait. I'm so excited. You know, and I'm excited to see all my kids get married. I don't know where I am going to end up, but I can be confident that God is going to keep carrying me through. And he's going to carry each one of you if you don't give up. The point is don't give up. Don't give up. Keep going. God has the power and the ability and the carefulness and the tenderness to carry you through. And it's so funny. Look at this. This is I saved this little fortune cookie thing because right before we went to Africa and I'm battling through this, I'm like, I open up my little fortune cookie and they never, you know, you're going to meet a friend today or some crazy thing. But this is what I got. You will step on the soil of many countries in your lifetime. That is my little fortune cookie. And I just thought, how did I get that one right? Well, it's another kiss from God. It was God saying, it's going to be okay. You're going to be just fine. So I'd like for us to wind up in Psalm 92. And I want us to read 12 through 15. The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green. Proclaiming the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no wickedness in him. And so when I think about this, you know, in the scope of eternity, I'm not really that old. But I'm about 3 years away from 60, and I don't know about you, but, you know, that always sounded old to me. 60 years old? That's pretty doggone old. But I still hopefully have many years after that. And I got plenty more getting old to do, God willing. And it is my goal to stay fresh and to stay green and to keep on bearing fruit. Just like a cedar of Lebanon. So, anyway, I hope you never slow down for God and that you understand he can see you through. So.